This is the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast coming from the epicenter of ag policy in Indiana, the Indiana State House. And I'm here with Steve Howell with Indiana Corn and Soy. And Steve, we're here at your annual Bacon Bar and Brunch. And this is just a fantastic event. Each year we kind of bring the who's who of Indiana agriculture right here, the third floor of the Indiana State House. You feed them and then you talk to them about policy. It's really kind of a great way to get everyone in the same area of the State House and just talk policy.
Like a lot of groups, we've had a legislative breakfast in years past, but a few years ago we hit on this idea, let's bring all the ag groups together and showcase the Indiana products that is made from corn and soybeans. And of course there's, I would argue there's no higher use of corn or soybeans than to feed the hogs and make some bacon. So we do showcase Indiana ag products. We've got yogurt from our Indiana dairy farmers. We've got a duck casserole from Maple Leaf Farms. We've got a spotlight on bacon. We've got candied bacon. We've got turkey bacon. We have beef bacon. We have what you might call bacon. But it's just a way of showcasing where our corn and soybeans go, and the biggest customer in Indiana is our livestock and poultry industry. And then also, it's a way of showing legislators that Indiana farmers are going to stick together. We've got a partnership for this event with Indiana Farm Bureau, Indiana Poultry, Indiana Pork, Beef, Dairy, all standing together at the State House to send the message that, you know, Indiana agriculture stands together. So it's turned into one of the, I would argue, the premier event at the State House, just given that showcase on bacon. You know, it's just, if you know, the smell of bacon kind of wafts through the State House, and they're just kind of drawn in to meet with us. And then it's a great chance to meet with our legislators, and they appreciate us coming in, bringing farmers in from their districts so they can meet with them. And then we can talk about our priorities for this session.
And let's be honest, it's the only reason I'm here. The food is fantastic. The candied bacon in particular, I'm partial to. And I should mention that today's podcast is brought to you by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau. So we're sticking together on this podcast as well. And so throughout today's podcast, we're going to be bringing in legislators, members of this family here of Indiana ag groups to talk about the different legislation going on here at the State House. And our first guest, you know, we've had on this podcast several times now, one of the full-time farmers here at the State House, Representative Kendall Culp. We now welcome another full-time farmer that's here at the State House. Please introduce yourself for us so that we can kind of get to know you a little bit. A senator here at the State House who is also a farmer. Please introduce yourself.
Yes, hello everyone. I'm Daryl Schmidt, Southern Indiana grain farm, raised turkeys for a number of years. We're going to have to digress a little bit. The pepper bacon is one of my favorite, but I will have to give a shout out to the turkey sausage.
Hey, I don't discriminate. I'll eat that too. I mean, believe me, I'll fill my plate here in just a little while.
I grew up on a farm in Southern Indiana. My parents started raising turkeys out on range in 1964. So, and up until 2019, I had a health issue, so we ended up getting out of the turkey business. But for 55 years, we were raising turkeys. So I'm partial to turkeys in Southern Indiana. You know, big shout out to Farbest and Purdue down in Southern Indiana. But so grew up on a farm. First in my family to go to college, went to Vincennes University in Southern Indiana, then Indiana State, worked for UPS in management for a number of years. And then, unfortunately, my mother died of breast cancer at the ripe age of 50. So my wife and I decided we were going to change careers, get married, move back to Southern Indiana, start farming and raise a family. We've been doing that for 31 years. Happy to farm, love it. A couple years ago, got involved locally on the DuBois County Council. Decided it was time to put up or shut up and get involved, and the people that know me, sometimes I'm not afraid to state my opinions. So decided to get involved in the local level, and then when Senator, now Congressman Messmer, decided to make a run at the 8th District Congress, I thought, why not get involved at the state level? I'm excited to be here. Kendall had the market cornered, being the only farmer, full-time farmer in the legislature, but now he's still got that on the House side. But, you know, I'm proud to be a full-time farmer in the on the Senate side.
So what is it here at the State House, you know, from an agriculture side, you know, there are still only two of you now.
Yes, exactly.
It's still, you know, it's somewhat representative of the general public. I mean, there are still few farmers that still feed everyone. But what is it? What is the impact that you're hoping to make here at the State House for farmers and for agriculture?
Well,
and obviously for your district as well. I mean, we don't want to forget that. You are still representing your district as well.
Absolutely. We're rural. I represent six counties in southwestern Indiana, from the Wabash River, Gibson County, Pike County, Dubois County, then down to the Ohio River, Spencer, Perry, and Crawford counties. So it's a wide swath across southwestern Indiana. We go from the beautiful national and state forest on the eastern portion to some serious fertile farm ground in Gibson County. And some great, you know, in Pike and Dubois as well. So my goal is just to be a megaphone, you know, for southern Indiana and rural America, whether it's, like you say, the constituents, everybody there, whatever topics we're on, and especially ag. You know, there's a diverse mix in the Senate, but I was encouraged to know there's so many great people up here at the State House that really care. You know, it's state level, it's... I guess maybe less political than the federal level, but people have diverse backgrounds and everybody brings something different to the table. And I hope to bring the ag perspective and our, you know, our common sense approach to taking care of the good things that the good Lord and Mother Nature has given us and do the best we can to feed everyone.
As you go through the bacon bar and brunch here and you speak to farmers, you talk to everyone here, you know, priorities for this organization. Obviously, one of them would be this biofuels tax credit. And Steve, we've talked about this on a previous podcast. Where do you stand on this with trying to get more retailers, you know, a tax incentive to retailers to carry more biofuels? Where do you stand on this? What are you hearing from farmers here today and in your district?
Well, it all depends on your perspective, but I think it's a win-win from a lot of situations, a lot of different things. You know, if we can do some incentives to incentivize people to use it more, it's homegrown. So, you know, we're helping our farmers, we're helping the ag industry. You know, every time you can get a dollar to roll over in the economy here, it's benefiting everybody. You know, as we're generating income for the state. So we can help the farmers, we can help, you know, our energy independence, renewables, you know, that's obviously climate. Those are all big concerns, and those are all things that we hope to help incentivize however we can.
Yeah, and it's, you know, as you mentioned, turning those dollars over right here in our community. The introduced bill, Senate Bill 254, is moving and did pass out of the Tax and Fiscal Committee, and it just yesterday passed out of the full Senate, so on third reading. So it moves over to the House. So we're really excited about that, and getting back to that economic impact. The introduced bill will add an additional $104 million to Indiana's gross domestic product. So by, you know, investing in Indiana, and I mentioned on the previous podcast, it's an ROI, return on investment. I call it a return on Indiana. If we can incentivize the adoption, it's not a requirement. And again, all this work is beginning to pay off. Senator Schmidt comes from a background where he just naturally knows that, but not everybody does. And that's, you know, that's fine. They're not in the business. And we have a lot of ag friends here in the State House, but it's really good to see, you know, full-time farmers stepping up, really plugging into this process, so the farmer's voice can be heard. Again, other ag leaders in the legislature, Senator Lysing, the chair of the House Ag Committee, she was a full-time farmer at one time. She's a big supporter of agriculture, as well as the the House Ag Committee Chairman, Michael Aylesworth. He was a full-time farmer at one time. He was actually, while he was farming a number of years ago, he was the president of the Indiana Corn Growers Association. So we do have a number of good friends. But just being in the business at a commercial scale currently, and your livelihood depends on it, that's just a different perspective than just being, a major supporter of the industry. So
it makes you think a little bit more, right? Like the current conditions, it really makes you think a little bit more.
Absolutely. And there has been a tendency for the last number of years that, people are maybe looking to be offended a little bit, but we want to, I'm encouraged that so many people now are wanting to get involved and get back in, just to try to make a difference. I have no preconceived notions. I want to come up here and try to help make a difference. Everybody's level of 100% is different. Your level of your ability to give back in certain different ways. But as long as people continue to work and try to give back and make a difference in their own way, that can be nothing but powerful and better for, better for our local communities and for the state.
Senator Schmidt, I know you've got another meeting to run to. We appreciate your time here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We look forward to chatting with you again here soon. And thank you for stepping up and getting into this. I mean, again, we need more farmers to do it. I know it's difficult. They've got businesses to run and everything else, but this is fantastic. So thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me. It's my first time on Hoosier Ag Today. I like listening to you guys all the time. So I'll continue to listen and reach out anytime. I'm here, one person trying to do my part to help. To help make a difference. So anytime, I'm happy to come back and visit.
I'm really sorry you had to put a face with the name.
This is great for me because the people that know me from back home, I have a face for radio. So this is just
this took
is
my joke. Look at that.
This is perfect.
I can do one better. I have a face for radio and a voice for newspaper. So
there you go. Okay.
Eric, I don't want to usurp the power of the interviewer host.
Yeah.
But I do want to ask Senator Schmidt to share a story, and he's probably used this in the past, but he really nailed it. We had a meeting. We were in the State House last week with a group of our farmers. Was able to catch Senator Schmidt in the hallway, and he went in. And again, it kind of gets back to this: why do farmers need to step up, whether it's serve at the local level in local government, join associations and seek out leadership roles, because we think, we're really good at running a farm, but we can't do that other stuff. And he was talking about farmers being a jack of all trades. So I'll let him take over, and he finished it up with.
You really are, as an individual, you get tied up in your own life and, paying down debt and raising a family and, can I step out of my box? Am I comfortable getting out of my box and doing things? And, I thought, why not? Let's just, let's try. Surely I can do it. And I encourage people not to be afraid of, stepping out of their comfort zone and try to just help and give back. And I don't like, I don't like the term jack of all trades, master of none. What I like to always say is I'm the jack of all trades, farming, master of most. So just look, and if people look at it from that perspective, just jack of all trades and master of most. And I think that describes rural America, in its truest sense. You have to be able to look at the big picture, see the forest for the trees, and just do your best at whatever you're trying to help make a difference. Happy to be here. I'd love to come back whenever and anytime.
Senator Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
really
you very
appreciate
much.
It.
Appreciate it.
There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. Along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
and we continue the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast here at the Bacon Bar and Brunch from Indiana Corn and Soy. And smelling the bacon, he made his way up here, Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith, and also the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Indiana. It was the bacon, right? That's what it was. Did you even receive an invite, or did you just smell the bacon and made your way over?
I just smelled the bacon, and I didn't even go to my office, and my team was waiting for me, and they came down 20 minutes later, and they're like, we were waiting to walk down with you, and like, I've been here eating bacon. Where have you been?
Well, I appreciate you being here. Obviously, a lot going on here at the State House. Let's talk about, obviously, priority number one. And I know that we got some news really just yesterday on SB1 and property tax reform. We're still kind of, you know, on the agriculture side of this, you know, trying to figure out what all this might mean. And ultimately, it may not mean a whole lot. We're not even really to the halfway point. Like, we're not even a halftime yet of this legislative session. But I know that what came back from senators on SB1 with this amendment, not necessarily what you and what Governor Mike Braun might have been looking for, maybe not as aggressive as what you might have been looking for in the way of property tax reform.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing, but to your point, this, we also know we're not even to the second half yet, right? So we're going to continue to have conversations, strategic meetings, making sure that these senators and reps know, hey, we're just communicating what the people have told us to communicate to them. I mean, what Governor Braun and myself are doing, we got sent here with a mandate to fight for tax relief, specifically property tax relief was the thing we heard more than anything else on the campaign trail for the last year and a half. And that to me is my priority one. So we've got to go in and say, listen, our farmers can't continue to have this 26.4% increase of year-to-year property taxes like Farm Bureau just did on their study and showed that. I mean, they can't sustain it. Small farms can't sustain that for very long. So we've got to move now, and now's the time with President Trump doing what he's doing, with, you know, Mike Braun's doing what he's doing, and I think the legislators need to get on board with that as well.
It really does seem like, you know, there's just this disconnect and trying to find the connection of what the voters are asking for and then what local governments are asking for. How do we find this balance? I know that there's been testimony, there's been back and forth between some of these communities, and you look at communities like a Carmel and what they're spending and what they say they'd have to cut. It's just this tough balance of what's true, what isn't, what do we do here?
Well, I can't imagine a Carmel where they can't build any more roundabouts, can you? I mean, like, that's, I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, we need our roundabouts. We need to spend $150,000 on artwork for those roundabouts, right? I mean, and I'm being very sarcastic right now, but you hit the nail on the head. There's been some communities, I won't name names, you name names, so Carmel can blame you, but there have been some communities that have not really been good stewards. They've been living in this massive amount of debt. The state government then has to incentivize them to keep doing that, so they incentivize bad behavior. Then you go over to counties like, I'll take Wayne County, for instance, Richmond. Their mayor, Mayor Ron over there, is doing a great job, and he's super fiscally conservative, very, very efficient, and they get punished for being that way. Their levy can't be what they need it to be, because they've been fiscally conservative. And so I think it's just there's a formula problem. I also think there's a mindset problem. The small communities, the first thing you'll hear them say, especially these mayors and, you know, council members, they'll come down here, they'll say, how are we going to replace the revenue if you cut property taxes? And I always say that's the wrong question to be asking. You need to first start by saying, what can we do as a municipality to make sure that we are cutting all the fat away? And then let's talk about what you need at that point. They just want to kind of keep living high on the hog. And I said 3 years ago, when we started receiving all this ARP money, this COVID relief money, where the federal government just printed more money, I said, this is going to come back and bite us. If we're not like Joseph and put it and store up in the 7 years of plenty, we are going to have a really bad come to Jesus meeting when that money runs out. And here we are, that money's gone this time. And everyone's saying, oh no, we've grown government. We've created government jobs. We've built more bureaucracy. Now we got to keep paying for it. or we got to cut it. And the only those are the only two options, either tax more or cut it. And Governor Braun and myself, we are not okay with taxing more. So it has to be cuts.
As far as cuts, I know that, you know, you had a great conversation with our C.J. Miller at Hoosier Ag today, talking about the proposed cuts across agencies. And I know that that's been a big topic of conversation here, you know, what Governor Braun is wanting to do across the entire state government. And we've talked about what we need to do for the agencies that you oversee in ISDA, the State Department of Agriculture, OCRA, the Communities of Rural
Rural Affairs.
It escaped me there for a moment. It's early still, and I haven't had my bacon.
Yeah, I was going to say, you need more bacon.
The bacon is behind me. I haven't had any yet. What are we seeing at this point? I knew that conversation was pretty preliminary. We've gotten a little bit into this now. Do we know at this point, with an agency like ISDA, have we gotten any more in-depth in those conversations about where these cuts might come from? Because I know in speaking with folks, we were running pretty lean and mean already. The State Department of Agriculture, I know, much like farmers, it was running pretty lean and mean already. Do we know where this might come from?
I think ISDA will be fine. I don't think they're gonna go through too many cuts. And honestly, if any at all, I know the governor has asked every agency to start with 5% cuts, right? To cut back 5%. So ISDA is kind of, you know, in that camp right now too. But ISDA has a good testimony, right? They can go and they can say, we haven't been wasting money. We haven't been abusing. We haven't been just frivolous with throwing taxpayer dollars around. They've been very lean, to your point. And actually, we are the leanest State Department of Agriculture in the Midwest when it comes to our counterparts like Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas. They have far more money and resources that they put into their State Department of Ag than we do, but we actually get more out of our State Department of Ag probably per dollar than they do. And so I think ISDA has a good testimony, they got a good track record. It's easy then to go to the governor, to House Ways and Means, to Senate Appropriations and say, hey, this is an agency that does good by the taxpayer dollar, right? And look, you give them a dollar and they turn it into $3, $4, $5 in return. And so it's very easy to sell that. And I think legislators know that. And I haven't talked to a legislator yet that doesn't understand that agriculture is the economic backbone of Indiana. And they're not going to let it go, to pot. They're gonna stand it up. They're gonna make sure it has what it needs to be successful.
I mean, you look at a program like Indiana Grown that has grown so much, and they're running on like three people. I mean, an incredible program that they're able to do there. So, other priorities here at the State House for you. What else are you keeping an eye on here? Agriculture has been such a hot topic here at the State House. I can't remember another year like this one in recent memory where we've had so many agriculture bills running through the State House. Is there anything on your mind here other than obviously SB1 that you're just really kind of focused in on right now?
Well, to your point, I think this has been a heavy agriculture year. I just think we need more bacon mornings because I think that would actually help the legislators realize how much agriculture does for them personally to get them going for their day. So,
absolutely.
But no, there's in all seriousness, there's a lot of great legislation that we're following right now. Anything from SB1, which is the big one, to education. There's education matters. The anti-DEI stuff that's been going through, that's a big battle right now. You've got things like even things like chemtrails, right? Like, there's a couple of bills. I mean, some people say that's a conspiracy theory, but, you know, Tennessee passed a bill that, you know, made it through. And I think there's, you know, it's a wide plethora of things. And I think it's really exciting. It's fun. Some of them will move. Some of them won't. Like, I don't know if this, you know, this weather manipulation bill, you know, the people know it more as the chemtrail stuff, right? It probably won't move, but a couple legislators in both the Senate and the House brought it. So we're following it and letting people know about it. And so... And actually, that's funny because that is one issue I get hit with all the time on social media. People say, what are you doing about chemtrails? What are you doing about that? And, you know, and then other people would be like, it's just a conspiracy theory. And then I say, well, listen, after the last 4 years we've had in America, the difference between the conspiracy theory and truth is about 6 months. So
that's a fair point.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith with us here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. just overall, your first, you know, what, are we even a month in here? Like,
yeah, about a month.
I feel like 2025 has been a long year already. January was a long year. How have things been going for you? Like,
I think it's going great. I love the job. I mean, I'm so honored and humbled to be here. It's just been, you know, I get so many amazing, encouraging messages from people outside the State House and small communities saying, hey, we're seeing what you're doing. You're keeping us informed. We love the passion. We love the fight that you're bringing to the State House. Keep it up. And my team's incredible. I mean, we've got an amazing Lieutenant Governor team. We got a great Ochre team, a great Department of Ag team. I mean, again, the people make it awesome. The job is great, but the people make it amazing. So I just love it and very, very excited for the rest of the year and, you know, Lord willing, 4-8 years, you know, to come. So, yeah.
Go enjoy some bacon. I've taken up enough of your time. Thank you for stopping by, and we certainly appreciate what you're doing here.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate you.
We're going to take a time out here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. It's presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau.
At Indiana Farm Bureau, we serve tree farmers, goat farmers, and in fact, all farmers. With over 250,000 members, Indiana Farm Bureau represents a broad range of farmers and puts power in your collective voice. You also get advice from our subject matter experts, more affordable health plan options, and support for youth programs statewide. So whether you grow soybeans or strawberries, membership means you'll be heard. Become a member today at infb.org.
And we're back here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, again coming from the Indiana State House, and the smell of bacon still wafting through the air, and my favorite time of year to be here at the State House, simply for that reason. The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast brought to you by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau, and I am joined now by the president of the Indiana Corn Growers Association, Chris Cherry. And Chris, you know, things are starting to wind down here a little bit here, but just not too long ago, it was pretty well shoulder to shoulder in here with legislators and legislative aides walking through here with plates full of bacon and eggs and bacon and sausage. I mean, just everything that you had here, and just the perfect opportunity to get through a lot of your priorities with these legislators. Just a great morning here at the State House for you and for the rest of the farmers to kind of share your story.
Absolutely. I think bacon puts everybody in a good mood. And when I got here a little bit before 8, there was already people starting to mill around. And you're right, shoulder to shoulder. And all the senators and representatives that are out here, their aides, it's a great morning to be out here. I had my local representative, Ethan Lawson. He told me that he's new out here. This is his first year, but he said he can already tell that this is probably the favorite event, because he said the turnout for this one is surpasses any other one that they've had out here so far. And when I'm talking to these guys, it's certainly a highlight for him. So
you guys obviously have your priorities, things that you want to touch on with each of these legislators. We've touched already on the podcast today about this biofuels credit. We've dedicated an entire podcast to the biofuels tax credit. But from your standpoint, a corn grower, what would this bill, should it get through, what would it mean to you and to your fellow corn growers across the state if this thing were to get across the finish line and we could start selling some higher blends of ethanol across the state and really make this worthwhile for these retailers to do it?
Sure. It'll be huge for us. I mean, my whole charge is, and I've told the guys on the board and when I speak, it's all about moving the pile. And, you know, you can eat it, you can feed it, or you can burn it. But the biggest way for us to move that pile quicker in the near term is to burn it. And this biofuels tax incentive, I mean, it'll save consumers almost $12 million in fuel costs annually, and add about $104 million to the state's GOP. So, you know, a question that during the hearing, and I was fortunate enough to testify in the hearing, a question was, how does this help Indiana, the state of Indiana? You know, one of the senators asked the question, and, you know, she said, I know how this is going to help farmers, but how's it going to help Indiana? Well, here's how it's going to help Indiana, because it's going to bring more money to Indiana. you know, and then it's going to increase Indiana corn and soybean farmers' income by almost $118 million annually, and it'll also support about 677 jobs in Indiana annually. So helps the farmer, it helps Indiana, helps your community, you know, it helps to move that pile.
This really is, you know, when you talk about all the different things, it comes down to, yes, helping the farmer, and that's your charge, but you have to relate this to the consumer, right? You have to relate this to, and make no mistake, these representatives, these senators, they're average consumers. They're not farmers. They are the average consumer, just like, you know, the rest of us that aren't farmers. You have to make it relatable to them, and that's what you guys are trying to do with the study that kind of laid all of this out, right? Like, you have to make this relatable, and that's what you guys have done here.
Right. There's about 400, I think, stations statewide that are handling the unleaded 88 right now. We have to make that more mainstream. I mean, I have to search it out, and, you know, my wife and I took our Jeep there, and we fill it up when we'll drive out of the way to get it. I mean, you're saving on average 10 to 12 cents a gallon. I mean, that's real. That's real money in our pocket as a consumer. But I'm not sure enough consumers at the pump understand that they can go over there and they use that unleaded 88. It's safe for your car. It's cleaner. It's better for the environment. You know, it puts money in their pocket, and it moves more corn for the Indiana farmer. So that's, you know, we got to just keep banging the drum and getting our story out.
What other legislation were you discussing with legislators here today other than that biofuels tax credit, which, again, we got an update on earlier from Steve that it is moving. That's great news, and we can keep following that. That's wonderful. What other legislation are we discussing here today with legislators?
Well, there's a Senate Bill 461 that's a grain indemnity bill. And, you know, as a farmer, the grain indemnity is very important for us. I mean, just like if you have money in the bank, you want to make sure the bank that you take money to is FDIC insured, so your money's insured. Well, as a farmer, if we haul corn to a corn elevator or soybean somewhere, you want to know that you're going to get paid for that crop. I mean, it only takes, you know, those don't happen that often, but when they do, if they're personal and they affect you, it could put you out of business. And so continuing to prop up that soy, the grain indemnity is important for us. And then,
By the way, I think that bill is on track. I think that we've got folks behind this. Is
yes.
That what you're understanding as well? What I'm hearing is that it's got the support it needs, and this thing is moving along.
Yeah, I think really our three priorities right now have been obviously the biofuels tax incentive, the grain indemnity. Both those seem to be moving like we need them to be. I think the Senate Bill 254, the biofuels bill, is going to the House. And then there's a House Bill 1192, which is a farmland assessment bill. And I think Representative Culp, who is authoring that or sponsoring it, and that is changing the way farmland is assessed. And, you know, farmers carry the load as far as taxes out in the communities. And, you know, I think we need a little bit of relief from that. Everybody does. But, you know, the average guy on his homeowners, it hurts, but it's incremental. But when you take that out and it's over 100 acres or 1,000 acres that a guy owns, I mean, it's just, that's a lot of real money.
Absolutely. And if you want more on that, tune into the previous Indiana Ag Policy podcast. We had Kendall on, and he did a great job of explaining how all of that might work. His bill might lose its identity, but it's in the governor's budget. It's in his Senate bill. I mean, it's in what he has, and so hopefully that all gets through, and a lot of good things happening there. So hopefully that gets through. But I know on that grain indemnity bill, you've got a lot of partners in that as well, a lot of folks working together to get that bill. I know Agribusiness Council of Indiana is behind it, Indiana Pork, Farm Bureau. I mean, a lot of folks getting together on that bill and trying to make this whole thing work. It really is the whole barnyard, as many of you like to say. It's everybody getting together on that, and that's what it takes.
I absolutely, it does take that. I think the better that the ag organizations can pull the rope in the same direction. I mean, that's, we all need to be working together on these things because they affect all of us. We might have a different ultimate priority, but anything that benefits ag, whether, you know, I think whether it's Farm Bureau, whether it's us, or whether it's pork, I mean, we all need to get behind each other and help move these bills forward for the farmer.
Chris, again, a great event today. We're starting to tear down, so if there's any more bacon you need to go get, you better go grab some here.
I think I've had plenty.
Thank you for you know what you're doing here at the helm, and again, another great event here. This has been fantastic.
Well, we're glad you're out here covering for us and helping to get our word out. So, I mean, you're a great supporter for us, too. So, thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate this. And I imagine I'll be seeing you here in Denver not too long. We got Commodity Classic coming up. And, you know, while folks think of that as just a big trade show, there's an awful lot of policy that's happening out there, too.
Yep. There's I mean, I think I don't see any day, any outside light for about 4 or 5 days out there. So, I mean, we're going to stay a couple extra days to hopefully see Denver. But while we're out there, I mean, it's about doing work for Indiana and the farmer.
Absolutely. Chris Cherry, president of the Indiana Corn Growers Association, here at the Indiana State House, the annual Bacon Bar and Brunch. Again, we're here at the Indiana State House, the annual Bacon Bar and Brunch. The Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance with Kyla Goodman. And Kyla, I don't know your title either. You know, I talk with Steve all the time, and I just call him the policy guy. What do I call you? Are you the membership sponsorship gal? Is that what I call you?
That'll work.
That works?
Yeah.
Okay. That's perfect then. That's what I'll call you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just not big on titles or preparing or writing things down. It's just not my thing.
They're too long. Mine's Industry Affairs Outreach Manager.
See, you hardly remembered it too.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we often like to remind folks when we do these things and as we close out today's Indiana Ag Policy Podcast that the work done on the policy side has absolutely nothing to do with the checkoff money that folks put in, you know, that go with the sale of their grain. Like, that's not what's being done here today. And I think that there is still confusion out there from folks about how this all works. So I like to be very clear that when folks kind of hear about what's going on here, they show up to the State House and see what, again, I will call an incredible event that you guys put on. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Again, shoulder to shoulder, people were walking through here today, and it's a testament to what you guys were doing. This is because of membership. This is because of sponsorships, and that's where you come in, and that's where the people come in. Explain this. Explain how it works.
Absolutely. So today's event was really great. We invite our members to come, and we had some farmer members here. We had a lot of our farmer directors from the board here today, and it's a really great opportunity to get them in front of legislators. Legislators love to see their people come to the State House and talk about issues, and so that's what we do. We like to bring them in to get them in front of legislators to talk about policy that affects Indiana corn and soybean farmers. And then it's a really great way to interact with industry as well. This event in particular, we have a lot of our sponsors are the other Indiana ag groups. And so it's kind of a united front that the State House of bringing all of agriculture together to really support each other and to support the policies that will affect Indiana farmers.
Which groups in particular? You've got that list, right?
I sure do.
Go right ahead.
So for today, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Farm Credit MidAmerica, Corteva AgriScience, Indiana Pork, Indiana Beef Cattle Association, Indiana Dairy, Indiana State Poultry Association, Indiana Farm Bureau, Indiana Ethanol Producers Association, and Bowes Public Affairs. And I'd also like to point out our breakfast was sponsored with a program through United Soybean Board. We had bacon sponsored from Indiana Packers, duck sausage from Maple Leaf, turkey sausage from Purdue Farms, and our milk was sponsored by Prairie Farms in partnership with Indiana Dairy.
So, again, just a lot of folks involved in this, and it really does show that united front with the legislators. And I think, you know, again, Chris Cherry was just in here and talked about, you know, this is one of the favorite events amongst legislators. And it's you know, it's more than just the bacon that's you know, the smell wafting through the halls here at the State House. It is the opportunity for these farmers to get in front of legislators. So if you're listening and you're a member of the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee, come down next year. They do enjoy seeing you. They want to hear from you. They enjoy when members come here to the State House and talk with them. We don't just say this. This isn't just a line you use to try to get people here. The legislators, they genuinely do appreciate it when people come down here and talk to them, right? This is something we consistently hear.
Absolutely. Several of our directors are, you know, in texting relationships with their legislators, and so they'll shoot them a quick text like, hey, I'm here, and they come right over, grab a few pieces of bacon, talk over some things, but it's something that they will make time out of their day to come see their constituents, and because that's who they represent and that's who they want to be talking with.
There is one farmer here today that I met, and I know that he came simply because he was recently at the State House for something else. And it's like, once you come to the State House one time, you get kind of enamored. You get here and you're like, okay, this is pretty cool, and now I'm kind of involved in the process. If folks want to just come here and see, if they want to get involved in this process, maybe they're not a member right now of the Indiana Corn Growers Association or the Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee, how can they get involved? That's up your alley too, right?
Absolutely.
Membership,
yep.
Membership gal, that's your thing, right?
Yes. So if you're not a member, I encourage you to go to our website, IncornAndSoy.org. And there's lots of information on membership, and you can apply to be a member there. There's information in our magazine that goes out. We will maybe post some things on social media every once in a while. You can absolutely call the office, call me, and I can get you set up for a membership as well. There's lots of opportunities. We have events throughout the year, some that are smaller, some that are bigger, some that are within the State House and within Indianapolis, but we also get out to the different congressional districts and get out and see farmers and bring their legislators and congressmen to them, which is really great opportunity to kind of bridge that gap, make it accessible for the farmers to reach their legislators and also for the legislators to see the farms and be on the farms. It's a really great opportunity for both.
And those are starting here very, very soon, so folks should really check out. There's an events page on that incornandsoy.org page as well, right?
Yes, there is. Keep refreshing it because we're always updating it and adding in new information. We've got a really great lineup of events for this year and more to come.
Kyla, thanks for joining us, and again, congratulations on a great event here today.
Thank you, Eric.
That's going to wrap things up here from the State House. Again, a wonderful event here, a lot of bacon eaten, and a lot of legislators spoken to, a lot of policy discussed, and we thank you for joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We'll do it again here soon. The Ag Policy Podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance, with support from Indiana Farm Bureau.